The opinions expressed on Inside the Black Box do not reflect those of WREK Radio or the Georgia Institute of Technology. Welcome to Inside the Black Box, a weekly program on science and technology, or as we like to think of it, science only funnier. I'm your host, Pete Ledovitz, and I am joined after a long summer hiatus by my ever effervescent co-host, a man who now has to report his age in scientific notation, Bill Hunt.
Thank you very much, and yes, I'm not so young anymore.
So, do any of our listeners...
0.53 times 10 to the second, right. That would be scientific notation.
So, do any of our listeners even know what scientific notation is?
Well, I think we could know. What is scientific notation?
Yeah. Well, to that end, ladies and gentlemen, today you are now welcome to the Welcome Back Bill Show. That's mm-hmm. what this is.
Right.
After, and you're going to tell us what you did on your summer vacation.
Yeah, I had some really cool stuff
right.
going.
So, keep in mind that we're sort of taking things sort of loose here today, so we've got some stuff to talk about, but if you have a question, a comment... even a rant, as long as it's, you know, within reason, it's no more ranting.
If you want to know where I get my hair gel, for example.
I know I do.
It's on the internet.
That is on the mind.
It's on the internet. You can't just get it anywhere.
Americans throughout the country. If you have a comment or a question, by all means, call us anytime during the show at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number is 404-894-2468. And, of course, that number is on the website, WREK.org, if you're listening.
And so if you're, we don't have an 800 number so or toll-free number, so if you're calling in from Patagonia, you just have to get
it.
The country
it's
code.
It's worth
yeah,
it to pay the toll.
Yeah, from Patagonia, yeah.
That's all I'm saying, right? And so Trent's here working the big board for us. Trent, quick question for you. Do we have the ability to screen calls in the booth today?
I mean, I can run outside.
Okay. We'll let you screen them. But even if we get some of our political ranties
yeah,
on
fine.
Here, if they
that's
got
fine.
An interesting point, put them on.
That's
we're,
fine.
Right.
We're open
right.
today.
Yep.
Okay. All right, so scientific notation.
So it's a way to represent really large numbers. So I'm 53, which is not really that big of a number, but it sure seemed like a big number when I was 22. That was an enormously huge number. But if you start talking about, you know, at 96 million miles to the sun, it's a lot easier to write it as 96 times 10 to the sixth.
Right, right. And
miles.
That's how you do. You usually report it as a number close to one. So you said 0.53. You could have easily said 5.3 times 10 to the first. And
right.
Or, you know, 53.
Right.
And it separates two things. It separates the significant part of the number, the number that contains sort of the precision,
right.
sometimes called the significand.
Mm-hmm.
Also the mantissa, right? Isn't that the other one?
No, that's logarithm stuff.
That's floating point.
Yeah.
Right, okay, but isn't the interesting part of the number is the mantissa?
Sure.
Right, and then there's the exponent.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I once dated a girl named Mantissa. But go ahead.
Right, I bet you did. I bet you get around, especially with all that hair gel you're wearing today. I mean, are you still wearing the same amount of hair gel? I mean,
you know, fluctuating. The thing is, I discovered this haircut. I get it cut short and put the hair gel in, and now, like, there are tons of people I've noticed... In various subgroups within the Atlanta community who have their hair that way. So I'm thinking about switching back to something else.
So, for example, scientific notation, good example. The amount of hair gel stored at Bill's premises, 6 times 10 to the 9th metric tons.
There you go. Yeah. So I've got big tubs.
So
yeah,
really big numbers. Mm-hmm. You separate sort of the magnitude of the number.
And small numbers as well. Yeah. So if you try to explain something that that's really, really, really tiny, like a femtosecond, that's 10 to the minus 12th second. No, that's picoseconds. 10 to the minus 15th seconds.
Right.
And so, you know, the other thing it does is that you quickly get the notion that you don't need to keep track of, so 96 million miles, close enough. Also, we're in elliptical orbit, so you don't need 96, comma 347, comma 892. You don't need all that other stuff for most of what you're doing. You don't need that level of precision. And it sort of implies that you're just keeping track. And that level of approximation is actually useful for getting kind of a gut feel for things.
And let's not forget the most important reason. It's just plain easier to say. And let's face it, as scientists, engineers, we're not the... you know, most loquacious speakers. So rather than saying, you know, 1,312,186,000, you just say, you know, 1.3 something something times 10 to the ninth.
Well, we're concerned that people are going to fall asleep when we talk anyway, and if we start giving all the digits, and they're really going to pass out.
Right. Yeah, I tried that joke. We did a retirement home other day. Didn't go over too well. So
really?
At least you laughed at it yesterday when I told you.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I'm definitely getting up there. So
I do appreciate that. Mm-hmm. All right. So since we're floundering here, let me make another call to our loyal listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you got a question or comment about any? Trent's laughing like listeners. What listeners? I don't know what he's talking about. If you got a question or comment, or even a rant about anything related to science and technology, give us a call here at WREK Atlanta, 404-894-2468. Mm-hmm. So, aside from a thesis on scientific notation, what did you do on your summer?
So, we have our place is up in Nova Scotia in an area of it called Cape Breton.
Mm-hmm.
And from the kitchen window of our place, you can see Alexander Graham Bell's summer home where he vacationed, and his descendants, who were the Grosvenors and founded National Geographic, go. And we ended up getting invited to a party at Alexander Graham Bell's home.
So you sang karaoke at Bell's house?
I did not, and I did not do any stand-up comedy.
Good thing
too. But it's not open to the public, so it's really kind of interesting for a variety of reasons. One, like when you go to, so it was, is kept up, and it still seems like it's much of the way it would have been when Bell would be there, flooring, all this kind of stuff, same sort of wallpaper and all this, and gutted and modernized or something like that. But you get a different perspective being at a famous person's house when it's lived in. I remember going to things like Mount Vernon, and, you know, you would stand behind a rope, and there over there was George Washington's desk.
But nobody touched it.
Nobody touched it. You didn't get over it. I actually got to sit down and play Alexander Graham Bell's piano, and there's this famous story that when he was... you know, coming up with the invention of the telephone, he was pointing out that to actually his future father-in-law, that if you press down certain strings on the piano and then hold the sustain pedal, then he could sing those notes and get those strings to so the sympathetic vibration. Mm-hmm. So there was sort of that's in the lore of creating the telephone. And some of the so there were like three guys that looked like A.G. Bell with the same beard there.
So you think the vibration of piano strings inspired him?
Yeah, I mean it's in the history.
Wow.
And so it was really really pretty interesting. And they said that he went to court 600 times to defend his patent on the telephone.
Wow.
600 times. They also said he didn't know trigonometry. So back to our discussions about being an engineer and math and all that. I mean, here's a guy that did a decent amount of engineering, didn't know trigonometry.
Well, we actually covered that a few weeks back when we had Karen Panetta from Tufts University and one of her nerd girls on the show talking about that they mentioned that, you know, some of the girls had trouble with math.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, you don't always realize this, whether you're an engineer or a scientist, you know, you'll have trouble with maybe one or more of those subjects, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
I mean, me, I was like thermodynamics, I never liked transport all that much, right? So, Trent, is there something in applied math that's not your bag, baby?
Well, I mean, math's difficult, that's why it's interesting. I wouldn't do it if it was easy all the time.
Right, that's exactly it. So just because somebody struggles with something, right? I mean, it was said of Edison that he never really understood. And let me actually call it trigonometry, because if you think about it, he was a big advocate of direct current and not alternating current. Alternating current requires you to understand this vibration, sort of stuff. And, you know, that in no way detracts from all the things Edison did.
Well, I think, I mean, you know, I actually like mathematics, and part of the reason I got into engineering because you get to use it all the time in what you do. But you can only use it if you know it. But, you know, I think that, you know, there are certain skills that are, you know, easier to acquire than others. And just because you aren't a great or top-notch mathematician doesn't mean you can't be an engineer. But it's like you can learn a foreign language, whether or not you're going to be able to write a novel in that language is right. only if you're incredibly good with right. writing or write poetry in that other language, but you can still learn well enough to read and write and converse. So. Right.
Agreed. And, you know, there are certain things that, so you mentioned the whole idea of innovation, mm-hmm. right? That the ideas come from...
tangential ways, really, sort of.
They do. In fact, we're actually going to mm-hmm. cover this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So next week, we've got Dr. McGregor from W. L. Gore, who's going to come mm-hmm. on and talk to us about how innovation is actually spurred when you have a structure to the company that's really, mm-hmm. really flat. Mm-hmm. And W. L. Gore was actually featured in The Tipping Point as something that has these limited size facilities. It's a very flat sort of structure, not a lot of titles.
What is The Tipping Point? There was a movie?
Tipping Point is a book.
Book,
actually.
Oh, okay. I
don't have my notes in front of me. So okay. it was a very good book, actually. I enjoyed it. And it pointed out, you know, how you can get exactly that, the tipping point to something becoming popular, or in this case with mm-hmm. with Gore's innovation. Yeah. So, and you're a fan of Gore-Tex, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I am. I was kind of confused there for a minute because I thought you said Tipper Point, which was the book yeah. about, you know, Tipper Gore's not liking certain rock music because of the lyrics. That would be the Tipper Point.
No, that we're going to say for a later.
We need to get a rim shot. Right. Something. Thing too, but, and the jokes are bad.
But yeah, the innovation. I mean, you can understand all the math in the world. You can mm-hmm. understand all the science, all the engineering. Mm-hmm. But it's that creativity issue, right?
Right. Right.
We should ask our former guest, Andy Zangwill. Mm-hmm. Did Einstein actually say that? What is it? Imagination is more important than knowledge. Something like that.
Well, I don't know.
The show, we pointed out he was so misquoted.
Well, I mean, it's something to the effect that, you know, or I don't know if it really started with him. You never know with these things, but that genius is 10% inspiration and 90% perspiration. So there's a lot of sweat that goes on there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of interesting that since math is at the core of electrical engineering, and then the guy that, you know, invented the telephone didn't know trigonometry that well. Mm-hmm. He was also the pioneer of aviation. In Canada, they had worked real hard to actually...
This is Bell?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
So he led a team that got flight in, I think it was 1909 or 1910, a year or two after the Wright brothers, but the communication was such that nobody knew the Wright brothers had done it.
Right.
So
right.
they were like, wow, we've done it, and it's like, we've done it for Canada. You know.
Right. So it's Gordon McGregor that's mm-hmm. going to be here on August 27th, mm-hmm. and it's Malcolm Gladwell's book, The Tipping Point. So that's where
Thank
we
you.
Get the
Well, you just have all this stuff.
And I'll remind you again, actually 2 weeks after that, we're going to Victor Breedfeld, who will be talking about everyone's favorite topic, fluid mechanics and complex fluids. Mm-hmm. I believe the title of that show, once I get it on the web, will be The Goo in Your Shampoo. Mm-hmm. It's going to be in all consumer yeah. products and how... A lot of companies spend a lot of time modifying the thickness mm-hmm. or the viscosity of these things.
I see a rap song in your future.
Should we rap that one? We could, maybe.
I can't.
Please don't.
I'm not a rapist.
Okay, Transvote
yeah.
is in.
Yes.
No rapping.
No rapping.
Inside the
I think that ought to be like a law or a rule or something like that.
Should we write that down?
Yes.
That's
no,
part of our
no,
rubric
no
now,
rapping.
Right?
No rapping.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so nobody's calling, Bill. Apparently they're not happy to see the
job. That's okay. You want to do science in the news?
Let's do something.
You want to do one of mine?
We can take a quick break first.
Holy smokes, we're 15 minutes.
Yeah.
All right, so
we'll
be back, ladies and gentlemen. Bill has some kind of science in the news. You're listening to Inside the Black Box on WREK Atlanta.
This is Friction.
It's working through 9548 at Brunswick Mines.
Yes, go ahead, over.
Alfie, I think we may have a mayday situation on our hands. We've grabbed a bunch of cars back here at the mines, and we can't hold them. She's away on us there. How's number 14?
14 left passes at 0818, over.
Okay, let us know she's by the empty there. We watch my head point and give her a holder, and she might be right out on the main line.
Yeah, all right. How many cars is there? Yep, over.
He has a whole of 30.
Right there now. 50. She's going 50, and I got no control of her.
You got no control of her, Wesley? Are you a couple to those cars, over?
And all the goddamn next of the driver.
Friction, Wednesday, 10 p.m. on WREK Atlanta, 91.1 FM.
Hi, this is your radio friend Joe Bizard, inviting you to tune into my country music classics here on WREK at 91.1 Friday evenings at 5 o'clock. We come alive at 5 with great old-time music. String bands, bluegrass, old country blues, a little of everything, jug bands, anything that you can imagine, you'll hear on the country music classics. All happy music. A little jug band. Don't forget, this is Friday at 5. We come alive right here with the Country Music Classics on WREK-FM 91.1. Make it a habit. Tune in. I'd love to have you. That's Fridays at 5 right here on WREK 91.1.
All right, welcome back to Inside the Black Box here on WREK Atlanta. Again, if you've got a comment or question about any aspect of science or technology, give us a call here at the studio at 404-894-2468. Today is the Welcome Back Bill Show.
Mm-hmm.
So did you put any more effort in on the theme music for the show?
I thought about it.
You do a lot of composing.
I do, yeah.
Did you compose stuff?
I got close to finishing another string quartet, so that'll bring the number up to 11.
And what sort of ensemble is this? Is this your classic two violins, viola, and cello?
Yeah, right. That's what these are.
And is anyone ever going to perform these? Or?
I hope so. I hope so. More. It's sort of interesting that you have to almost learn the protocol of in a different culture in order to get these things performed.
Okay. So basically, they think you're a bonehead.
How do you meet them? I mean, I don't really.
My daughter, she's in eighth grade. She plays cello.
There you go. That's fine. Use the daughters of the friends of mine. That I could do that. You know.
All right.
I'm in the mode of creating. I'd like to get them out there.
Aside from reminding people what scientific notation is today, we actually will attempt to educate somebody, perhaps Bill and myself only. So you said you had a Science and News article.
Yeah. So this is Parasite in Galapagos Penguins Prompts Avian Malaria Fears. A parasite has been found in Galapagos penguins, raising fears among researchers that it could lead to avian malaria, a disease that contributed significantly to the 50% extinction rate of endemic birds in Hawaii. So the Galapagos, it's got archipelago associated with Darwin's studies, and it's 100 kilometers to 600 miles off of the Ecuadorian coast and retains 95% of its original species of all its birds. So in a way, it's sort of been free of mass extinctions at least over the last 20 years or so.
Is that because it's so isolated man hasn't been there all that much?
Well, they don't know. I mean, it's always speculative when you say, how did this parasite get here? But it was probably introduced with human activity. They said tourism has increased to 140,000
really
visitors in 2006 from 40,000 in 1990.
Okay,
so you're getting a lot of people coming in.
It was like eight.
Eight people, yeah. Yeah, there was not a Starbucks there when Darwin first went through. it's getting introduced in Plasmodium or Plasmodium is the species, but it's sort of one of these interesting things that you know we've got these things, we want to preserve them, but they have to be really careful to preserve them and not have impediment. I guess species have always sort of moved around, or you know, they go from one place to the other. I was checking with the Nova Scotia Department of Fisheries to see if I could like get crawfish growing in the pond that we have up there, and because actually crawfish are eaten in Sweden and Norway, not brought in from China or Louisiana, but they actually can, you know, it's indigenous there.
Oh wow!
But they don't want them in Nova Scotia, so, and they said that you can't. You can't guarantee.
Because 8 swimmers a year are maimed by crawfish. Is that the problem?
You know, it happened to me as a child. I don't appreciate you making fun.
Really? Are you traumatized by that?
Yeah, you never played with crawfish.
I did.
When you
I
were
collect
kid?
Them, but they're usually so small.
No, I mean, when you were a kid, when you were
yeah,
a kid
when they
in
pinch
Chicago,
you.
You'd be at the
the
art museum,
them.
And there'd be some crawfish there, and yeah, no, they pinched. They're pretty nasty little buggers there.
But I did survive. You somehow.
Yeah,
were...
I'm somewhat traumatized still, but anyway, that you know, you think about it. you could say, well, I'll just keep them in my little pond here, but then birds come in, grab them, and drop them someplace else.
Oh, okay.
You know, then it's already moved to another area. So they are trying to keep non-indigenous species from creeping in, but you have these things happen.
Right.
These things happen, so.
Right. And that is the hard part of science, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of separating the effects. I mean.
Right.
Nature is a huge dynamic system. Species move around all the time. Sometimes it's clear when man does it. You know, if the bird's got an oil slick on it, it's probably not nature, but you never really know.
Right. If it's got hair gel on the penguin, that's another thing. But, I mean, you could, I mean, it could have gotten there. You know, the penguins, I presume, migrate there from someplace else. Don't penguins usually migrate?
I don't know. These are the warm weather penguins.
Okay.
Yeah, they sort of like feathery feathers on the top. Yeah.
Okay.
Aren't there some like that in Africa?
Yeah, there are.
So, I mean, you don't know. I mean, scientifically, you just don't know where the parasite came from.
You just assumed they appeared.
Yeah, suddenly it appeared.
You believe in the theory of spontaneous generation.
Sure.
The penguins just
Okay. Right.
We'll devote another show to that one.
Yeah, spontaneous.
All right, let me start. Since we have no callers who are not motivated by the Welcome Back Bill show, I thought for sure there'd be a veritable plethora of people.
All my fans.
Lined up.
Yeah. Sure.
And, you know, I'm realizing now we read these articles, we not only have to define the scientific words, we have to define the regular arcane words used by a liberal arts major who wrote the article on science. So plethora, lots of stuff.
Ton of.
Right.
Yeah.
And actually, that's a favorite word in science. Mm-hmm. People like to use plethora and paucity.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Paucity meaning a very small amount, right? Paucity of data and a plethora of examples. So, all right, so I've got an interesting article, which is quite relevant to you.
Mm-hmm.
From the
more abuse.
Tuesday's,
welcome back, abusive.
This Wednesday's Science Times from the New York Times on August 19th. An article by Nicholas Bacalar. God, I got to put my glasses on here. It's ridiculous here. I can't even read this anymore. Entitled "Wrinkle Removers Backed by Science." So it starts with nostrums that promise to smooth wrinkled skin are a staple of snake oil salesmen everywhere. But now there is strong evidence that certain kinds of treatment are effective. Over the past decade, researchers have been learning which treatments work and why. So nostrums, basically sort of a panacea cure that has little evidence to support it.
Right.
So
and
it's a $10 word
so
for
it's an
snake oil.
English dictionary word. It's not a science
word, exactly.
Right?
So we can't be blamed for that one, right? It's not like phenylketonuria or something,
something like that,
or scientific notation.
Or polyandry or something like that.
So the article goes on to point out that the key is a growing understanding of the skin's connective tissue called dermal collagen and a recognition that damage to the mechanical parts of the collagen outside the skin cells and not necessarily genetic damage to the cells themselves cause wrinkled skin. And they actually point out in a recent review of the Archives of Dermatology conclude that 3 anti-aging treatments are proven clinically effective. A topical application of retinol, which is a sort of a vitamin A version of vitamin A, carbon dioxide, laser resurfacing. I don't even know what that is, but it sounds frightening.
What is retinol? Because retinaldehyde is a key sort of linking component. And rhodopsin.
You got to define rhodopsin.
Retinaldehyde. It's a protein that goes through transformational change when you get the capture of a photon of light.
Right.
And it's there in bacteria,
that's
rhodopsin.
In your eye, right?
Yeah.
Right. So the whole rhodopsin things, they're weird. They're weird.
But retinaldehyde is part of that linkage.
So retinal, which is the IUPAC name for an aldehyde, is the aldehyde version. This is an alcohol, basically.
Got it. Okay.
So all it is it's got a hydroxyl group on it. We've talked about what that is, an oxygen and a hydrogen. That's half of water, basically. Anything with a hydroxyl group on it means it wants to interact with water somehow. Now, but the rest of it is a lot of hydrocarbons, so it likes to dissolve in fat.
Right.
So if it's got a fatty part, it likes to dissolve in fat, and it's got a polar part, you know, an acid or an alcohol, that usually means it likes to be with other molecules like that. And here's a good word for you, I guess, amphiphilic. Right? Loving both.
Okay.
Right? So, like ambidextrous,
right?
So, amphiphilic, loving both, either water and non-water soluble stuff. We give that a name. We call it lipophilic, meaning it likes other molecules that have two N.
Great. Sorry.
How many seconds do we got?
God, sorry about that.
Okay. So I'm still talking?
Yes.
Yes, all right.
All right, we're... but you think we're coming back, or is it just cut it out?
I think you're good.
Keep going. Okay, we're good. Okay, right. So... did you get your phone there?
No, I'm just going to turn it off. Okay. I'm sorry.
So, in any case, let's see. What were we talking about? Retinal. Yeah. So, retinol is
defining some of these terms. So, for this, what is collagen? Collagen
is another protein, but unlike things that deal with signals and this whole branch of proteins you talk about, they not only respond to light, they respond to other things, usually in membranes. So in a membrane, something comes along, binds to it, it changes its conformation, and it tells the cell to do something. Mm-hmm. Collagen's the building block, right? So there's I got to look this up again, but I know I'm familiar.
So collagen's a precursor to lipids?
No, collagen's is a protein that is used to build stuff, right? So your bones have collagen in them, in addition to the mineral part. Cells have sort of an endoskeleton, a cellular or a cytoskeleton, cellular skeleton, or endoskeleton, an internal skeleton that's made out of collagen. And it's got a really unique sort of triple helix form. And we talked about this on the show on cooking, that when you put it in boiling water, the triple helix breaks apart, and then it sort of reconnects in a random fashion and gets swollen with water, and that's what Jell-O is.
So how does all this affect my skin and make it nice and silky smooth?
Well, that's the thing. Apparently, they try to deal with the way that you can... the aging of that collagen, right? So the collagen obviously denatures somehow, or changes its structure, or changes the way it's arranged in your skin. And I don't think we have time to go into the entire article. Mm-hmm. The point I want to make with this is you look at these things on TV or infomercials or things like that, and, you know, skincare products. I don't know. Is your wife a big fan of skincare products?
Minimalist, but yeah, I mean, my wife uses
a little retinol,
she
some of the fruit
of
acid
stuff.
Like
she's
that.
Pretty basic.
I mean, they just use moisturizer too. Trent, are you a big moisturizer guy?
Not so much.
Guys in general, we're not, right? We're happy to go through life.
It looks expensive.
Alligator skin.
Yeah.
Although, well, here's the thing, though. The point I guess I want to make is that some of this stuff actually works. It's not a permanent solution, but it is a temporary solution, and it actually does something reasonable. Mm-hmm. And they actually mentioned later in the article one of the treatments. All right, so we mentioned this one. We mentioned the retinol, and then we mentioned this horrible-sounding thing. What was that? Carbon dioxide laser resurfacing. I think this is just...
that's not a good idea.
Indicative of the fact that women are willing to put up with some very strange names on these things. My favorite one is the chemical peel. And I don't understand chemical peel, because to a chemical engineer...
It's getting dipped in acid. Isn't that what it is?
A chemical peel is when you're standing next to the tanker truck when it explodes and your face melts. So I don't know if I like that. But the third one they mentioned was the injection of hyaluronic acid, a moisture-retaining acid that occurs naturally in the skin. And that's actually sort of an interesting one. So some of these, like these, this was a clinical study that a number of scientists said was done with scientific rigor. And then some of it is just made-up stuff on these late-night shopping network things and do this, and I don't know what it works. So actually, I think the web is a good tool for that. A good friend of mine who was formerly in the faculty had problems with his knees, so he started taking what everybody's taking now. What is this, chondroitin sulfate?
Yeah, right.
And there's another compound in there as well. I forget what it is. Some of them are similar to hyaluronic acid. Hyaluronic acid, in addition to being in your skin, in your eyeball, to sort of mediate the pressure in your eyeball, it's also in the synovial fluid. That's the fluid in your joints. And it's a neat polymer.
Does the FCC allow you to say that? Synovial fluid?
The FCC does, but I'm not sure that's legal in the state of Georgia. But it's... So what people take now as a dietary supplement are the things that are in your joint fluid. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to help your joints.
Glucosamine,
that's it.
Chondroitin.
But you can make an argument, there were German studies that were done a number of years ago that I read that seemed very good to me. You got a against German studies?
No, just the Nazi era.
No, not that old.
This.
Like in the 80s.
Sorry.
But, I mean, so if the studies show that you get improvement, and, you know, you're replacing an important component of your synovial fluid. You know, none of this is carved in stone, but you can make a reasonable argument that it is actually doing something. And the ironic thing is the way they first tested this was in dogs. Because think about it. Dogs
can't tell
you if they're
concerned
in pain.
About their skin.
Not their skin. I'm talking about the synovial fluid version of this thing. You can tell the difference between a dog that's having pain in its joints mm-hmm. and one that isn't, right? Because the mm-hmm. one will run around, jump around, catch the frisbee, the other one right. won't. So that's an interesting thought.
How can you tell if it's not just a lazy hound dog that's not going to get off the porch?
Well, it could be, but when he does get up, he doesn't, you know, grumble as much.
Right.
Well, we give it to my dog. My dog's almost 10 years old, and it has made...
Wow.
She will limp after she goes running mm-hmm. if she doesn't take this stuff.
Hmm.
So on that... utterly scientific note, where we've now realized that just because it's a goofy consumer application mm-hmm. doesn't mean it doesn't have decent science backing
right.
it up.
Right.
We will take a quick break here on
break.
Inside the Black Box on WREK Atlanta.
Then you love the DeSoto Hour every Saturday night at 7 on WREK. The best of the big bands and the small groups played with minimum talk on your favorite jazz station, WREK. The DeSoto Hour, Saturday nights at 7 on WREK, like we said.
This is Deborah Bird.
And Joel Block for Earth and Sky.
Listen to our program every day at midnight, 8:30 a.m., 1 p.m., and 5 p.m.
You'll hear about everything from sea life to star systems.
For quality, diverse programming,
stay right here at WREK Atlanta.
All right, welcome back to Inside the Black Box here on WREK Atlanta. All right, so we covered wrinkle removers, which is relevant to you.
Well, let me ask a couple of questions there. I mean, I don't know the answers to them, but for the skin care...
What makes you think I do?
Well, you're a chemist. you know, I'm
some
not.
Some would debate that.
You are not. But,
possibly a fair assumption.
Yeah. To what extent are... You know, they obviously don't get... like fat ugly woman to advertise these things on television.
Ever
so
politically correct, Bill Hunt, ladies and gentlemen.
So you're gonna have to use the 10-second drop.
You could have said fat ugly people like you and I. No, we don't have to drop that one. Fat ugly people like you and I. That would be more politically correct.
Yeah, that's not my. That's not kind of the way I roll. But anyway, but I mean, part of this is I would think that you've got some component of this that is hereditary. You know. Having good skin, not having good skin, and what do you eat, and whether or not you exercise, and whether or not you spread some goo on yourself is minor.
Well,
did I not put that properly?
No,
sorry.
I'm very
you
succinctly.
You get all over me today. I'm just sort of,
goo
you know,
would be the technical
goo,
term, but we're going to
yeah.
cover goo in 2 weeks, ladies
goo,
and gentlemen,
yeah.
with Dr. Victor Breedfeld.
We can be covered in goo in a couple of weeks, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, here, this is the thing. Mm-hmm. So we are a culturally biased show because we got two mm-hmm. dorky middle-aged guys here who don't
right.
think about moisturizers. We should get the...
No,
in
I
fact,
don't.
We had some technical difficulties with the Nerd Girl shows. We mm-hmm. are going to get them back mm-hmm. in a few months, and that is the first question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask
yeah,
them.
Yeah, that would be a good one.
And I
yeah.
think the reason we can get away with that is mm-hmm. luckily, I think women of our particular mm-hmm. species, I'm not speaking for you, Bill, but they, our species, dude, really don't care what we look like, which is the only reason you and I are married. I don't know. But the point is, a little bit of goo can mm-hmm. make a difference. And of course, the article points out that you have to inject the hyaluronic acid into the skin, right? So applying it topically doesn't really make
yeah.
a difference.
I'm going to do a plastic surgery thing at some point. Cause,
but
I mean,
you can inject a lot of stuff in your skin and it'll make a difference,
yeah, like
right?
Botox.
Like right, right.
Like
so,
kill yourself.
Botulism toxin
yeah.
that disables the nerves so
yeah.
you relax. You can
Which
put
make
collagen
sure you don't,
in
you know,
to mold things out. It stretches the tissue underneath the
right.
skin so it looks smoother.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm not into the whole
Right. I mean, so we actually, remember we did a show on this back when we were on Radio Sandy Springs on male enhancement products, right? And our general, do you even remember
get the button.
No, I can talk about this because it's the scientific basis.
Uh-huh.
And if you look at all the things that are marketed as these enhancement products, they're really vasodilators that increase blood flow, which can have a positive effect in that arena, but permanent growth, I don't think so.
I think for most women, though, male enhancement would be like if you'll actually learn to operate the vacuum cleaner.
Right, or
that would
take
be considerable. Take out the garbage without having to be told.
Drug, ladies and gentlemen.
They would be. That would really enhance a male as a person.
Thinking that's a niche for us. What do you think?
I'm not sure if there is a pill for that.
Yeah.
But if we had one,
my
wife would buy it. She'd
crumble it up and put it in her cereal.
All right.
So.
Who knows what she crumbles up and puts in my cereal?
Yeah, God knows. Yeah.
All right, have you got anything new for us?
Well,
again, no plethora of callers, despite the fact that
we're
back.
Don't worry about it. But, I mean, one thing is the this article from the International Herald Tribune, dated August 19th, cervical cancer vaccine is popular but fails to cure doubts. In the 2 years, cervical cancer has gone from obscure killer, confined mostly to poor nations, to the West's disease of the moment. And it's talking about how this has been the potential cost for vaccinating girls.
Vaccinating or is it vaccinating?
I would think it was probably vaccinating.
Vaccinate. What's in your tea? Do you got anything that I don't know about in your tea?
No, just tannic acid and the other kind of usual stuff.
No ethyl alcohol.
No, not me. But that the cost in the U.S. Would be $1 billion to give vaccinations for all the girls up to the age of 18 that can't afford them.
Right.
Huge, huge, huge money involved to the point where it's pointing out that, let me get the company, Gardasil, who makes one of these, will give $4,500 per lecture for hundreds of doctors. They've been recruited and trained to give talks about Gardasil.
Well, part of that's just that they're doctors. And when I say doctors, I mean not doctors like us. I mean medical doctors.
The kind of doctors that can actually do somebody some
they
good.
They get more money. So whereas you might go in and someone might pay you $1,000 to give a lecture as an honorarium or even less or maybe, $2,000. $4,500, unless you're a big cheese physician.
Well, in the article, they also say politicians in Britain have been invited to receptions catered with drug company money. So I guess what this gets into is the, conflict of interest. Right. With screaming and, all that kind of stuff. So, at what point, two things. One, is it a conflict of interest that you're giving this talk and you're getting paid $4,500 to give this talk and it's not $4,500 to hear your opinion, but $45 for you to deliver the opinion of the drug company?
You just knocked it down by a factor of 100. You mean $4,500?
$4,500. Right. What did I say? $450?
Yeah, no.
No, $4,500. So
again, another case for scientific notation.
Yeah,
4.5 times 10 to the third.
Part of what it brings out, particularly with the pharmaceutical companies, is, and I think this gets to be systemic in our culture, that to me, I don't really want them to be interviewing on the news somebody who has a vested interest in their particular point of view.
Mm-hmm.
A representative from the tobacco company telling me about, the tobacco company, I don't need to hear because I'm not really going to get an independent
discussion. Ever, right? We're human. Even scientists
You won't get it from somebody working for the tobacco company, no. But you could get it from somebody else.
But you remind me, I was listening to Liberal Talk Radio, and it was some guy's show. I think this was...
I remind you of Liberal Talk Radio?
Radio.
Go ahead.
No, I listen. I've got XM Radio now in my new car. Which, by
bragging.
The way,
you've got a new car?
Is a Hyundai Elantra.
I gotta see this.
It's not
thing.
Like a Jaguar or anything like
you've
that.
You've got a new car.
A physician would buy.
I was the guy that was like breaking in your car door and leaving $20 on the seat.
It looks so bad.
This guy's,
it's in my garage. I'm going to donate it to some charity. It's going to be hauled away. It's barely drivable.
They're going to break it down and sell it for spare parts, but go ahead.
Right. I'm going to pull a Stripes move. No, I'm not parking that there. I'm abandoning it. What is this, Bash Doctor Day today?
I think
Bash
so.
No, it's not really.
It's just, I mean, I was sort of extending, you know, the vaccine is sort of one issue, but I'm, you know, when you get to the marketing.
Well, you don't have any daughters, do you?
No.
Yes,
no.
My wife and I are seriously thinking about getting that. Actually, now insurance is covering it.
You know, I'm not even saying it's a bad idea to get this. I'm just sort of zooming in on a different aspect of, you know, kind of extending, you're paying somebody to give a lecture for your company. They have the appearance of being independent.
Right.
It's just, so, you know,
here's
Dr. Johnson from Atlanta is talking about this. But he's getting paid $4,500 to deliver this lecture, so I don't.
Big money is involved. Mm-hmm. There's always the potential for conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. And what always kills me is these the people that are not fans of global warming. Mm-hmm. You know, who really knows if global warming is caused by mankind? There's evidence for it. It's a complicated issue.
Yeah, and I stopped using aerosol deodorants years ago, so you can't blame it on me anymore.
We just thought you stopped using deodorant, period. It's a small booth, ladies and gentlemen. That's all I can say.
With not a lot of airflow.
But, there's always that potential. And these people that say, well, these scientists, they're making a lot of money off this global warming stuff. I don't really think so. Because otherwise, I wouldn't have traded in my barely drivable car for a Hyundai Elantra.
I mean, that's a case where, nobody's, there's not a big money trail there. But I'm sorry, if you're getting paid, but that's a different issue from somebody's getting paid $4,500 per lecture. To talk about this drug and to push this drug and to give the appearance of independence and not conflicted, you know, I've got a problem with that.
Well, see, what I believe that the only cure for that is, and you have to be reasonable, because this guy on Liberal Talk Radio was he said he called up this woman at RGR Nabisco and said, how can you sleep at night? And she just goes, you know, it's just a job. I have to feed two children.
They make Oreos, don't they?
They do make Oreos.
How can you be upset with somebody that makes Oreos?
That's exactly the point. You know, people have to make a living. Doctors make a living as well.
Yeah.
The only way that you can combat that, I think, is by truth in advertising. So I didn't realize this till I started reading the medical literature. Medical literature, many of the journals have an actual statement of conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to do the same thing inside the paper.
Yeah.
Funding agencies have this issue. Georgia Tech makes us fill out a conflict of interest statement every single year.
Right.
But there, I have read papers that said, you know, this company paid for this study. This company employs this person as a speaker and as a consultant.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell you what he does. But at least it's there so you know.
Well, that's a good step. I guess my problem is really with the media that, you know, something happens and they call in the quote expert. I'm trying to think of the one. Oh, this one with the anthrax, the guy that killed himself.
Oh, yeah.
He's under investigation by the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, who do they have talking for the dead guy? They've got his lawyers, who, by the way, have been paid.
Right, but as long as they mention they're his lawyers, then I have some perspective. But you're saying they should have tried to get a third party.
I don't need to hear from them.
Okay.
That's my point. I mean, you're a lawyer. You know, you got several letters there that spell liar.
Right.
You know, I don't even need to hear you peep, because I know you're not going to give me the truth. You're going to bend the truth for your client so that you can collect from the government, for the family, or whatever. I don't need to hear from you. Do that in court. Don't do it out in the media.
Cynical table for one.
No. Table for...
Yeah, there's a good likelihood of that, but not always. You know, sometimes...
Talk to me. I don't want to hear the guy that's kind of vested interest. Don't even put him on the media.
You were in Nova Scotia for the summer. Why are you so cranky?
I'm not cranky.
You didn't get any crawfish.
I can't put crawfish in my pond. You know.
Are you going to harvest them to eat them in like etouffee?
That's what I was going to do. And grow wild rice to sort of have a sustained, you know, have them eat the wild rice. I'll go out and what's wrong with that? And it would just be weird to have Nova Scotia crawfish that would have, because that's actually where the people ended up in Louisiana. Started out in Nova Scotia.
Well, actually, that's an interesting segue into another article I've got.
I'm not paid by the government of Nova Scotia, by the way. I just thought I'd point that out.
Well, there you go.
I have no conflict of interest. You know.
We can take a quick break.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, again, Bill's back, ladies and gentlemen. So by all means, give us a call here at 404-894.
I'll try not to cuss anymore.
2468. We'll be back in a moment on Inside the Black Box on WREK Atlanta.
Mozart toasties are so very great. Kids rejoice when Mozart's on their plate.
They know they're quite nutritious
and so delicious.
They'll lick the dishes
and soon you'll realize how impactful your kids in Falcon and the Arts can be.
They'll get better grades, make more friends, and express their individuality. When they learn to play some music, act or paint or dance or write creatively.
Hot from the toaster and filled with the essential creative thinking skills of an 18th century musical genius, Mozart Toasties are an important part of an arts-healthy childhood. Studies show that involvement in the arts helps kids increase test scores and promotes academic achievement. Feed your kids the arts. For 10 simple ways to learn how, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. The arts. Ask for more.
On the first Sunday of every month, tune into WREK for the iDrum Archive Sunday Special. Drawing from years' worth of performances at the downtown performance space, you'll hear improvisational jazz, electronic, punk, and all sorts of music captured live. For more information about iDrum, visit their website at www.eyedrum.org. Again, that's the iDrum Archive Sunday Special, the first Sunday of every month at 7 p.m. right here on WREK Atlanta 91.1 FM.
Welcome back to Inside the Black Box, where we were taking a segue from Bill's rant on... What is it? How would you describe that? Conflict of interest.
Well, yeah. I mean, it extends from this. You know, you why should I believe somebody that's getting paid to tell me what they're getting paid?
All right. Well, let's get controversial. Okay. Let's throw something out here that'll get the callers upset, so they'll call in. I would say that, you know, compared to law or business or any other field of endeavor, scientists are the most objective and unbiased people on the planet. But even they are human.
Right.
And we can't be biased.
Well, some of them are human.
People don't think it happens, right? So I know people. I'm thinking of someone I know in my field, a Nobel laureate, who literally walked around with an entourage. He had a posse. They didn't call it a posse back then.
Yeah, they did. When did they not call it a posse?
Well, okay, this is more than 20 years ago.
But it was a posse.
But the point is, you know, he had his supporters, and if you said something against his basic theories, which was responsible for the Nobel Prize, I mean, this is like, this is no grand.
Prion.
This is, what is the equivalent
Prion
to
guy.
The music or entertainment? I guess it's like the Oscar. It's the Oscar.
The Grammy,
of the, millennial prizes, sort of technical. So, and, you know, they jump on you. He didn't even have to open his mouth. They do that sort of thing.
Right.
But it didn't change the fact that when you actually went on paper and compared things, you had a forum to debate things back and forth.
Right.
So I think we're one of the best. But we're not perfect. I mean,
there
are plenty of scientists who, under the pressure of getting money and publishing, will exaggerate the advantages of stuff they do.
Well, another example, what I pulled up here also was the article is about sort of an AIDS conference, which fewer people went to this year than another conference. But one of the things that, so they got Bill Clinton this year, but not Bill Gates. But one of the things that it said that just kind of, you know, it said this is one of the biggest epidemics in terms of number of people killed, AIDS, ever. And I'm kind of going, how do you actually know that? You know, how do you actually know that? And got into here, getting to your other point, that there are people, scientists, there are a few of them that don't think HIV and AIDS are linked.
Yes.
You know?
And one of the more famous ones offered to ingest human immunodeficiency virus.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Probably are.
Actually, I take that back. I believe he believed that there were a number of other cofactors that were important.
Right.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, part of what I looked up all the stuff on the bubonic plague and all this, and just, you know, so that they're saying that there are 40 million
people. He's got
people.
A 40-page tome.
Yes,
can I use
do.
Tome?
You can
fancy
use tome.
Fancy word for large you, volume.
Large volume.
In front of
but, I mean, they're, you know, they're estimating that 40 million people have died worldwide from AIDS, but it's an estimate. So, it's not like they tested all these people, did autopsies, and determined this was good enough for 40.
That's a very important point in science, mm-hmm. right? So when someone gives you a number and they say it's increased by 40% or it's 40 million people or something like that.
Now, how do you know?
Sometimes it's mm-hmm. easy, right? You know, when someone counts the number of people in attendance.
Automobile deaths.
At the ballpark, mm-hmm. it's probably pretty accurate. Mm-hmm. So, probably, you know, plus mm-hmm. or minus maybe 50 people, right? Because
right?
you got a bunch of Yahoo sneaking into the bleachers.
You know,
and
so, again,
like that,
the estimate of how many people died from the bubonic plague in the 14th century is, you know, a guess.
Right.
It's not
there's
really,
always data, mm-hmm. and then there are assumptions, and then there is analysis, and there's a model in that analysis, right?
And so you don't know exactly.
Right, so you get a whole bunch of people that died, and the cause of death was unreported. Mm-hmm. But they reported symptoms similar to AIDS.
Right.
And you make a guess. You say, look, I'm going to count half those people.
Because
I'll figure half of them died from AIDS. Some of them probably died from something that looked like AIDS. Or a quarter, or a third, or three quarters.
Yeah, here's from Wikipedia. The Black Death is estimated to have killed between 30% to 60% of Europe's population.
Right.
450 million to between 350 million and 370 million.
Well, there you go.
I mean,
so they give you a broad
big, wide range and it's not known, so we don't really know. I don't even think, even though we've got all this modern approach, we don't know how many have died of AIDS.
Yeah, we just had a caller. They said they didn't have time to go on air, but they wanted to mention that the bubonic plague, was it killed less people than HIV? But he said it was a higher percentage of the population just because it was less people.
A much higher percent. Yeah. I mean, that's a good point because they're going in absolute numbers. AIDS is supposedly creeping up there. But, you know, you're talking about a third of the population from China to Iceland.
Right.
We're not talking about those kind of percentages. We got far more people on the planet now than we did then. Yeah. So if they go with raw numbers, maybe it's getting comparable, although I've got some problems about how well we know things, you know.
The importance of units, right? Mm-hmm. Is it on a percent base? Right, percent. It's a unit, right? It's a fractional thing. That's what most people don't care about units, right?
Right.
Numbers don't mean anything without units. In
mathematician.
In science.
If you got the absolute numbers, but in terms of devastating and how quickly it ripped through, the nature of the thing was different.
Right.
You know, and sort of the Black Death sort of came and went, and the nature of AIDS is that it's not going away.
Right, and the reason I don't even get upset over someone saying something controversial like it's not linked to HIV. Mm-hmm. I think it is linked to HIV, certainly linked. Maybe it's not. Mm-hmm. There are cofactors that are important.
Right.
It's because scientific theories come and go. They change all the time.
But they actually, you know, to Wikipedia's credit here.
You just referenced Wikipedia?
I did.
We didn't do a show on Wikipedia. We decided on
It's a great thing. But, you know, it's a source of information. You got me off from what I was going to say.
I can't remember. I didn't mean to pick on Wikipedia. I'm a big fan of Wikipedia.
But, you know, it does say, actually, there are a few scientists who are dissenters. So instead of trying to make it sound like everybody's in agreement on this, which you never have everybody in agreement on everything.
You're never 100% sure.
Right.
Never.
So, you know, hats off to them. They're not making it sound like, well, everybody's running a lockstep behind this. There are a few, you know, and one of them's Kerry Mullis, but, you know,
Kerry.
Yeah, he's the one they mentioned. He doesn't think AIDS and HIV are related.
All right, man.
But this
he's
is also,
a freaky dude.
He
man.
Is. He's the guy that during the they actually hired him during the O.J. Simpson trial.
Yeah, he's an adjunct professor here, is he not?
No, really.
Yeah. Nobel Prize for polymerase chain reaction.
Yeah.
He is. He has some adjunct position here.
Wow, man. Maybe I shouldn't.
We should be hanging out with him when he's here.
Well,
no, he's a righteous dude. He's a wild party guy.
Have you met him?
I haven't met him, but I've read articles about him. We're outside the scientific literature.
Yeah, we could have him on the show and the kill button for 10 seconds. We wouldn't have an hour left to have
on
the show.
All right, I'm going
to
segue back to what we were talking about with conflict of interest. And this is another article from the Science Times this Tuesday entitled A Conversation with Nina V. Fedorov, an Advocate for Science Diplomacy by Claudia Dreyfus. And it talks about Nina V. Fedorov, when she was a single mother in the 60s, she's 66 now, defined odds,
and conventionality by working her way through college, graduate school, and postdoctoral studies. Dr. Fedoroff, a member of the National Academy of Sciences, did fundamental research on plant transposons, or these jumping genes, and was among the first to clone plant DNA. She's a science advisor to the Secretary of State and administrator of the Agency for International Development. So I want to look at this first question. So the question that Claudia asked of her was, when you gave a recent speech at Columbia University advocating genetically modified food, someone sitting near me said, oh, great, our State Department is pushing genetically modified foods. She's the ambassador for Monsanto. What's your response? And her response is, and again, this speaks to conflict of interest, right? If she was from Monsanto, who does a lot of genetically modified foods, maybe so. Not necessarily, though. You just never know what people's motivations are. But her answer was, you know, how do I answer him? My answer is there's almost no food that isn't genetically modified. Genetic modification is the basis of all evolution. So we made that point before, right? That just natural,
you know, and just to educate
chemical
the,
and radiation.
To educate the audience, the genetically modified foods are, for example, Roundup Ready, soybeans.
Right.
So that they can just spray it with herbicides, and they're not going to kill the soybean plant, but they'll kill all the weeds around.
Right.
Well, what they did was, you know, develop a gene that would make it so that it wouldn't be attacked by the Roundup, and injected that into the process. But, you know, that's what genetic modification is. We have been doing it with hybrids and, you know, doing all kinds of things for thousands of years in agriculture. So, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Frankenfoods, as they say in Germany. But
yeah, so why are you not a big fan of the Frankenfoods? It's okay. You can be honest here.
I'm more natural. I'm more natural.
Okay.
I'm all about the natural
why?
Stuff.
But you make it sound like this
know.
Is just a cool line you use when you're driving down the street in a convertible to meet women.
No. I don't know. I just think that it's, and maybe it's, maybe if I knew more about the science of it, I think it was really not very different at all, compared to, the way we've done hybrids in the past.
Right. Well, Dr. Fedoroff makes the point that currently, if everybody did organic farming, we'd have a hard time feeding the planet. Do we get a caller?
He had a comment that corn is very heavily modified by natural selection, but it won't grow if, like, man doesn't plant it. So
you're considering just the planting in somehow a genetic
modification. Yeah, it's like even though man planted it, still by natural selection, it's heavily genetically modified just throughout.
You know, that's a really good. And the point is, you plant it in proximity to other strains of corn and things like this.
So, in a sense,
you're going to do a bit of crossbreeding.
Right.
And that's what people are worried about. You have these seeds. So this is the. We won't go into the rest of the article.
Yeah, I think we're about out of time, too.
But suffice it to say, you plant the genetically modified stuff next to non-modified stuff, and they will cross-pollinate
and all sorts of problems.
Right, that's the real problem.
Yep,
so,
Brett,
we do need to wrap it up. Thanks for joining us on the Welcome Back Bill Show, despite the fact we rambled incoherently.
There wasn't incoherent.
Did we learn anything? I'll show you incoherent.
I did.
Conflict of interest is an ever-present issue.
We learned that Bill's not real fond of news media that calls in lawyers as experts for the. But anyway.
Okay. It's a lawyer thing, right?
No.
Okay.
No.
But sometimes lawyers are good. Our guest last week was a lawyer who talked about intellectual property law.
Right.
Was very, very helpful.
Right.
So, Andrew, he didn't mean that personally. I think that's one thing we learned, that you can't always judge a book by its cover. Just because someone's talking about a cosmetic or talking about policy doesn't mean they're biased.
Right.
And you really have to do a lot of digging.
It doesn't mean that they're not. Yeah.
To get to that conflict
of
interest.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Next week, we're going to be joined by Gordon McGregor from the W. L. Gore Corporation, who's going to talk about this idea from Malcolm Gladwell's The Tipping Point that technical innovation could be spurred by small, flat structures. We don't know what we're doing the week after that, but after that,
we'll
we're going to talk about the goo in your shampoo with Victor Breedfeld.
Right.
Join us next week here on Inside the Black Box, Science Only Funnier on WREK Atlanta.